It's proven that diverse teams lead to better outcomes. It's equally proven that the majority of people tend to hire and promote employees who look and act exactly like them.
It's obvious that we should have, you know, diverse teams. The research states it, but it's systemic how many times and in how many different ways we're creating environments that are not promoting all people.
That's Christy Wallace, CEO of the Elevate Network and host of Elevate's podcast called Changing Conversations with Women in Business. Christy's mission is to provide and cultivate a community for professional women to take the next step in their careers, whatever that means to them. In her work, she's changing the culture of business by providing women with the opportunity to lean on and learn from each other.
When we still live in a day in 2019, where gender parity does not exist, the more we support one another in achieving parity and moving that needle, the better we all are.
I'm Meryl MacDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. So, Christy, the Elevate Network was founded in 1997. That's over 22 years ago. What are some of the changes that you've seen over the last 22 years?
Meryl, thanks for asking that question, and I'm really excited to be here today. The state of women at work has definitely progressed in the past 22 years, but in so many ways, we have not gotten to where we need to be. Elevate was founded by a woman, Janet Hansen, who was working on Wall Street at a bank and saw the power of community, the power of women supporting each other in the workplace to overcome much of the bias and the challenges that they were facing, the glass ceiling, you know, so everything from access to opportunity, equal pay, paid leave, support, not, you know, being in an environment rife with sexism or discrimination. These were all things she wanted to see in this future world and believed so much in the power of building connections and support to help women move ahead. So fast forward 22 years and Elevate has grown from a local New York City women in finance to a global community of professional women spanning industry, function, geography, and career stage, but who all still believe very deeply in the power of community. It's who you know that opens the doors, connects you to opportunity, connects you to that support, to that advice, can really help to move women forward. And we do a lot to make that to happen, to really double down on that power. So Elevate is making that happen. By continuing to make these connections so that we see more women supported into getting into leadership, women advocating for equal pay by using their collective voice. We're seeing women getting into office where they're changing these legislations, and we're just seeing more power, more opportunity, more optimism about what it's like to be a woman at work. So 22 years later, there's still much work to be done, but I believe even more so today than I ever have in what our community is able to do to close these gaps and to support one another in doing so.
Okay, so we were just talking about the changes over the last 22 years, and yet there's still a lot to be done. What would you say to someone who's really trying to elevate his or her leadership and try to cultivate a community of inclusion?
I would say, you know, there's a number of things to do to really elevate your leadership and create a culture of inclusion. And one, just start with conversation and transparency, providing a safe space for leaders to really understand who is in their workforce, who's on their team, how do they best thrive and succeed in a workplace, what's holding them back. There's so much assumptions that's happening where we tend to make these assumptions based on our own experience. And we're all different and we bring so many different pieces of us into the workplace. So start with conversation from a safe space. Engage the people that you work alongside with in helping to identify the solutions, and then take action. Have a plan. You know, how do we create an inclusive environment? What are the steps to take within our organization? If that's creating an internal resource group, so employees have more community internally, or if that is, bringing in speakers or professional development, if it's just getting senior leadership to be more engaged day to day with everyone within the company and building those relationships. Those are three easy examples. There's many more, but to tie that goal, creating a place of inclusion and belonging, to business metrics. So making it so that every leader within the organization sees why this is important, sees that it's tied to business goals and outcomes, really understands that it is internalized and it's deeply ingrained within the culture of your business, then you start to see real change. Because it's always easy to say, sure, this is a nice to have, but we've got to focus on X, Y, and Z right now. But if you make this a top line focus, then you really not just send a message to your leaders, but to the whole company that this is something you value and that you are taking steps towards inclusion.
You know, there's a lot of discussion around both diversity and inclusion and varying points of view around creating a business case. Some people feel it's really important to have a business case, whereas others feel that that's ridiculous. You shouldn't need a business case. It's so obvious and it's the right thing to do. What's your viewpoint on that?
I would say, so yes, it is obvious. There's tons of research and data out there that says diverse teams outperform non-diverse teams. There's more client focus. There's more innovation. I mean, there's so much research that supports this. But yet we're not seeing that happen. You still look across senior leadership of organizations and it's very homogeneous. It's very one-dimensional. And the reason being is that it's easy to say, yes, this is, you know, the right thing to do. But we tend to fall into these habits of, you know, mini me. I'm successful in what I do. And so I, you know, consciously or unconsciously, I'm hiring people similar to me. Because they are, because I know I'm successful and I can immediately see them being successful too, because we're similar. So you start to see people hiring people, you know, others that are like them. That's not feeding into diversity. Oftentimes, hires are made from your network, from people you know. So maybe your community or your same school, your same town, but oftentimes that's lacking in diversity. So you're pulling from hiring candidate pools that are lacking in diversity. I think that there's also, you know, I always talk about when I was, you know, a first-time manager and I was managing a large team and I wasn't married and I didn't have children. And I absolutely, you know, thought differently of the person who had to leave at 5 to go pick up their kids than the person who was staying till 9. And I didn't, you know, and I've thought a lot about this. Did I make bad decisions? Did I discriminate? And, you know, and I don't think that I did. But I also know that you consciously or unconsciously start to think someone is working harder, doing better because they can put in more hours or because, you know, they communicate differently in a meeting and they're more outspoken or aggressive. You know, there's all of these little micro elements that add up to the impression we have of those in the workplace and who then gets the opportunity to move forward and to succeed and who doesn't. So yes, it's obvious that we should have, you know, diverse teams. The research states it, but it's systemic how many times and in how many different ways we're creating environments that are not promoting all people, that are not inclusive of all people, that are not creating a situation for all people to succeed, and instead continuing to perpetrate a lot of what has been happening for years and years, which is a certain type of person will move forward and the rest don't.
And what do you think are the keys to creating a culture for all different types of people to succeed?
I mean, one is just listening. I'm very aware of the fact that I have a lot of privilege, me personally, in having the platform for me to, you know, share my thoughts, my ideas, you know, in places like this, to lead a business. And I'm in, you know, not everyone has overcome some of those challenges that I've been able to overcome. And I would say first and foremost that my experience matters, but what matters more to me is who isn't overcoming those challenges, who isn't able to move into those positions of leadership, what is holding them back? How do I really listen and understand what their experiences have been? And then how do I use my position to change it? Because we oftentimes, you know, when people move into positions of leadership within organizations, they're thinking about, you know, it's always internalized. What is your experience? What have you faced? How did you overcome it? And we create solutions based on our own identity. And to really be transformational, we need to create solutions that are based on a multitude of different identities. And that comes from really understanding and listening and providing that space, and then to creating the plan for change.
I love that. Create the solutions that come from multiple identities. Like, tell me a little bit more about that. What are you thinking there?
It's something that is important to me in the role, in the work that I do. Elevate is a community of professional women. And in society, we tend to try to create these very easy and neat buckets. So it's okay, women and men. But that's actually not, it's not that straightforward, right? The easiest way to think about it is the pay gap, right? Mm-hmm. The gender pay gap is the average difference between men and women who are working. So for what a man would make working the full year of 2018, for example, a white woman would have to work 4 more months into April to make that same amount.
Wow. April of 2019, you're saying, right?
Yes.
That's awesome. That's not awesome.
It's not awesome. And a Black woman would have to work until August, and the Latina woman would have to work until November. So this is compared to a white man, and how you can see the pay gap, how it worsens based on not just gender, but as we break it down by race, there is a bigger differential there.
So, Christy, you're saying that a Hispanic woman would have to work what's almost twice as long as a white man.
Yes.
Those are unbelievable statistics.
Yeah. So we need to change that. And I think some of the ways we can do that, one is legislation requiring companies, as we've seen outside of the United States, requiring companies to disclose pay data. I think two is employee activism, so employees asking for transparency within their organizations. Three is having strong leaders who are willing to implement pay transparency and internal pay studies within the organization. And four is we need to just talk about it more. So talk more about money, talk more about how much we're making with our friends, with our peers. Being comfortable with that discussion to help break down some of those barriers of silence. So that when people go into the negotiation table, they don't know what to ask for. Let's change that.
And you talked earlier about creating this incredible network of women. I was really interested in when you said it's all who you know. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. I mean, it is who you know. When I think back on every job I've ever received, except for the very first one, is just connections I've made in my life who have gotten to know me over time, who have thrown my name in the ring for something, who have supported me in making that connection. Speaking opportunities, mentions in articles, whatever it is, has really come from others who have thought to mention my name to bring me into the room or bring me into that opportunity. Beyond that, it's support. You know, I've really built a community of women who I can turn to for advice, for insights, and that has really helped me to grow as a leader, to be stronger in this role. So it's who you know who provides you that support, that advice, that insight, that connection to opportunity. And this goes back, you know, decades and decades and decades when we were very much in these small local communities and you really knew everyone and it was how, you know, oh, you're at the hardware store and it's, oh, you should go to this restaurant. It's great. Or we're making those recommendations. We're helping to make those connections. And then you fast forward to today where the nature of relationships and connections has evolved and has evolved very quickly in the past 20 years. We're now with online and social media and you know, this digital landscape, the number of people we can connect to has gotten so much bigger and so much broader. But I think the depth of relationships has also lessened because it's not just who's in our local community anymore. We're looking on this global landscape and it's about, you know, oh, I know X number of people on some, you know, LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter. We've got followers, but do you really know who they are? Are you really making those connections? Because that surface level is not really going to get us to where we need to be. It's about that understanding of who this person is and having that relationship. So for us at Elevate, it's really around creating in-person experiences where you're meeting people, you're building those relationships, you're creating that support in a regular cadence. And what we've done online, which is with our squads program, and that is groups of 6 to 8 women who meet for half an hour a week via online video chat over a course of 12 weeks. We built that program because we've really found that it's about the ongoing touch points, the sharing, the information, the support. And it builds these very, very deep relationships, oftentimes with someone you've never met in person, but someone who has the advice, the expertise, the clout to really support you and help you get ahead. So long story short, yes, it's who you know that provides the advice, the insight, the support, the connection to opportunity that's so key as we're navigating the professional world.
I know a lot of people in the workplace today feel that they don't really have time to build a network. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are relative to how one really gets it started.
I mean, there's a huge ROI to having a network. And it doesn't have to be huge. You know, it just has to be people that you can turn to for that advice, for that support. So I would say a few things. And I get the time. I have 3 children and I run a business and tend to have my fair share of extracurricular interests and activities. But I've found some things that have worked really well for me in terms of building a network. One is I tend to invest some time if I'm going to an event to see who's going to be in the room and to reach out to them. So if I'm going to a conference, if I'm going to an Elevate event, whatever it is, I look to see who's there and I will reach out and I'm coming to, let's quickly meet up. Let's say hi.
And it's amazing how responsive people are to that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It really is. Yeah.
Two, I tend to read a lot of newsletters and articles and stories. And I'm always, whenever I'm reading it, I'm thinking, who would be interested in this? Mm-hmm. Who's this relevant for? And then I share it. I send them a quick text, a quick email, a quick message. Hey, I saw this. I thought of you. I think you'd really appreciate this. I know some others who are really good at doing that in a more public landscape. So they may be posting on Twitter or on, you know, Instagram, and they're tagging a bunch of people within those posts that they think would find this relevant. And that's creating more of this external community as well. But just thinking throughout the course of what you do every day, who would be interested in this and how can I share it? I try to just send people quick notes too. You know, people in my core closer group, how are you doing? How's things going? How did that big project go? I mean, just caring about people and their everyday. And I know, again, we're busy and we've got a lot going on. But two things. One is, you know, there is that ROI, because then you have people you can go to who are invested in you, who you've built that relationship with over time. And two, it has been so powerful for me to have others check in with me. How are you doing? How was that project? I just saw you were traveling a lot. You doing okay? it's wonderful to have people within your professional space who have that type of understanding of what your life and your day-to-day existence is like, who really are invested in your success and they care about what you're doing. And that's helped kind of with the emotional burden of being a professional woman, to feel that there's others that relate to me and they care.
I bet you're really good at walking into a room and really finding a group and joining the conversation. What advice do you have for people who struggle with that?
So I would say I'm actually not great at walking into the room and having a conversation. I am very introverted. I'm an outgoing introvert. I mean, I'm great one-on-one. If you connect me with someone, I'm great at having conversations. But I feel anxiety just walking into a room with a whole bunch of people. It's not easy. It's not easy for many of us. You know, so one, it is definitely look to see who's going to be there and reach out to someone. Even if you don't know them, but you want to know them, gives you kind of this person you can meet up with. Bring a friend. It's always great to bring a friend to any type of event.
Yeah, your wingman, right?
Yeah, your wingman. I would say, look for groups, and sometimes you just have to jump into it. Think about what is that opening line you might want to say is, you know, beyond, hi, I'm Christy and I'm excited to be here. It's, you know, I don't know, does anyone watch this show, or did you see what happened in the news today, or, you know, how have you been going to these events before? What do you like about them? I mean, there's some easy questions you can ask that can spur a dialogue. But the biggest piece of advice I would say is just do it. There's going to be so many things in our life and our career that make us uncomfortable that we hesitate to do. But building your network, going outside of your comfort zone, meeting more people is very helpful for business, for, you know, growing your business, for connecting to different perspectives, different opportunities. And I would recommend you take the plunge and go for it.
You know, and you bring up a really great point, because I think often people think that one needs to be an extrovert to network. And so many of us are introverts. Mm-hmm. And yet do it what looks to be quite naturally. And I think that's a good thing for people to remember, too, that just because someone else looks comfortable doesn't mean they are.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for saying that, because that is so true. We can get into our heads and, you know, the grass is always greener. Someone else is always doing it better. We make those types of assumptions, and it's important to be vulnerable. I try to be really vulnerable in the office and in my networks, about just talking about when things are hard for me, or when I've struggled with something, or I'm nervous and unsure. And I also talk about what I'm love doing and what I'm proud of and what I'm excited about. It doesn't have to be one-sided, but it's about showing that not everyone's perfect. Not everyone has it all figured out. And I've found that when I'm vulnerable and I open myself up to talking about what I've struggled with, people oftentimes then, you know, share their stories and ask me, you know, how did you overcome that? Or what are some of your tips? What are some of your tricks? And so the conversation goes much deeper, where I'm really able to share my insights and help someone else. And oftentimes they're sharing what they've learned and they're helping me. And the best way to overcome a lot of this is just by talking about it and figuring out ways to move forward.
And as you're seeing really successful women advance through the workforce, what do you see, certain things that they have in common?
Yes. Yes and no. I mean, I believe that there's research that is still showing that women that have more male, characteristically male traits in the workforce are moving ahead. So they may be, more aggressive or come off as more confident. These are like big generalizations, but that's traditionally been the notion. I think that that's changing. I think that's changing a lot. And I think it's changing not just for women, but for men. We're redefining what a leader looks like. We have spent way too much time, you know, trying to put everyone, easily define different roles. And a leader, you're supposed to be, you know, aggressive and confident and all of these things. And that's hurt everyone, not just women, but it's created an environment where you can't truly be your authentic self and lead in the way that is authentic to you and to your business. And so that is changing. And I'm seeing that more and more changing where leaders are, you know, being more vulnerable, being more honest, showcasing some of those traits, you know, if it's compassion or if it's, you know, a desire for social change or social good, you know, they're starting to show that in a more apparent way. And that is part of how I think we're going to be able to change the gender landscape and leadership is by really breaking out of these confines of, you know, what does a leader look like and really redefining that.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting when servant leadership became all the rage, and it was as though men had just discovered it. It was where so many women have had that approach to leadership for so long.
Oh, absolutely. I'm heading tomorrow, actually, to which I'm really excited about. So Elevate is a B Corp, and B Corps are for-profit businesses focused on doing social good. We have to pass a number of criteria to qualify to be a B Corp. So you're good for the environment, you're good for your employees, you're good for local communities, for underserved populations, so on and so forth. And we're proud to be part of that community. Other B Corps include Patagonia, Eileen Fisher, Ben & Jerry's, Warby Parker. So a number of great companies. And so tomorrow I'm actually headed to Eileen Fisher's Learning Lab in upstate New York. And we have about 100 B Corp women CEOs that are all coming together.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah,
it's one of my favorite events. And we come together and it's We the Change, Women for Change. And it's about how we're working together to create this world that we want to see. And how do we use our collective power and influence to be drivers of that change? And so when we talk about the power of community and when you talk about, you know, the changing face of leadership, I see this as, you know, a key time to really leverage this momentum, to leverage these conversations, to amplify them on a larger scale and to create a better world.
That's going to be a really powerful group of women. That's terrific.
Yes. Yeah, it's great. It's a great group.
Tell me a little bit about the weekly journal that you keep. What's in it and how do you do it?
So I have two journals, if you will, quote unquote, that I have. One is very internal. So I'm oftentimes in my own head a lot. I'm very reflective. I think I move really fast and I don't spend enough time processing what's happening in my life and understanding if I'm personally and professionally and in all my identities going in the right direction. So I tend to really try to carve out time in my day-to-day to think back about, you know, am I the person I want to be, the leader I want to be, the parent I want to be, the, you know, partner and human that I want to be, and how do I always strive to be better? And that's important to me, not in a way. And I think when I was younger, that would take the shape of more, I don't want to say regret, but harping on the things that I wasn't proud of or that didn't work out, which we can tend to do sometimes. But now it's really about learning from every experience and thinking about ways to continuously be better, be more aware, and to grow. The other piece of my journaling or reflection, which is more public facing, is that I'm incredibly fortunate in my life and in my career. And I just meet really amazing people and I do great things and, you know, speaking at events or meeting women in the Elevate community. I have my podcast, the Elevate podcast, all of these different touch points where I'm building connections and relationships. And I'm terrible at social media. I'm just not as great as I should be because I want to live in those moments and live in those relationships. And so how do I, and so I'm not always, you know, thinking about how to document it. I'm great at sharing like articles and research, but not great at sharing these individual experiences and touch points. So I started this journal, which is more public facing, where I'm thinking back about all of these experiences and the people I've met and what it's meant to me and what I've learned from them. And so that's been really powerful too, because I, again, life goes by so fast and it's given me this opportunity to really appreciate the wonderful humans in my life and the good that they're doing in this world and the impact that that's had on me.
And you haven't used the word, but I heard the spirit of gratitude come out so much in that.
Oh, yes. Yes. Gratitude.
You know, I have found that gratitude is one of the greatest gifts we can give ourselves.
It is. And it's also, you know, it's medically, I guess medically is the right way to say it, but there's a lot of research that shows that just, you know, focusing more on those moments of gratitude and what we're happy about every day, it creates a chemical change in our brains to just think about the world more positively, to approach things a little bit differently. And it's that mindset shift of just, you know, appreciating what we have, showing that gratitude and saying it out externally too, because it's not just, you know, for you internally, but how do we spread that gratitude around to change others' lives as well?
So gratitude is something we all need more of. I'm now going to ask you about what we need less of. Like, what do you think leaders most need to let go of?
I think that leaders, one, need to let go of, and I'm not going to, I don't know if I'm going to say the right word, but this hierarchical thinking. You know, I understand that there's has to be some sort of, you know, hierarchy within businesses and understanding who's making those decisions and who's owning some of these business goals and results. But it creates too many layers in between the person who's leading a company, the people that are doing the work, those that are, regular touch points with customers, or those that are building the product, whatever it is. And it's important that as leaders, we stay in touch with, we stay connected to everyone within the organization, and to not hide behind the layers of hierarchy that have come into place. I also think for leaders, it's important to think about collaboration. You know, it's the same as going to this Eileen Fisher event and with the B Corp Women CEOs. I mean, many are, you know, directly competitive to each other in terms of maybe their customer, their industry, their product, but they work really closely together because collectively supporting one another is driving greater impact at a faster rate. So we think about that a lot within the Elevate community. There's so many wonderful companies out there that are supporting women in the workplace. And for us, you know, when we still live in a day in 2019 where gender parity does not exist, the more we support one another in achieving parity and moving that needle, the better we all are. So it's really about that collaboration. How do we support each other as business leaders and as change makers to see that amplified?
Well, Christy, I want to thank you so much. This has been absolutely fantastic. This is Christy Wallace, the CEO of Elevate Network.
Thank you, Meryl. It was really a pleasure to be here. I loved your questions. It's getting me thinking, and I'm super inspired for, you know, the rest of the day, the week, the year, and everything we have moving forward.
Well, that's terrific, because you certainly inspired me. Thanks, Christy. It's proven that diverse teams lead to better business outcomes. It's equally proven that the majority of people tend to hire and promote employees who look and act like them. Christy provided some great tips to consider as leaders set out to create a culture where all people can succeed. First, don't make assumptions based on your own experiences. It's imperative that you recognize your team as individuals with unique perspectives. Second, and building off that, don't create solutions based on what works for you. Listen with empathy and then use your leadership position to affect the changes that benefit the team. Third, no population of people, whether it be gender, race, or ethnic background, is one-dimensional. Each person's an individual and must be treated as one. Thanks so much to Christy for joining us today. Don't miss her podcast, Conversations with Women in Business, which she hosts with Elevate Chair Sally Krawcheck. Check out letgoandlead.com for an episode discussion guide as you reflect on Christy's insights. We'll see you next time.